Funding for Think comes from SMU's Master of Liberal Studies.
You're listening to Think on KERA 90.1. I'm Chris Boyd. What do Lucian Freud's portraits tell us about their subjects and about the artist who painted them? And what did he demand to know about them in order to create meaningful likenesses on canvas? Often called the greatest portrait artist of his time, Freud was still painting at the end of his life, and before his death last year at the age of 88, he had been involved in the development of a retrospective exhibition that debuted at the National Portrait Gallery in England. That exhibition's only other destination is the Modern Art Museum of Fort Worth, where it opens this Sunday, July 1st, and runs through October 28th. Joining us to discuss it is the Modern's chief curator and co-organizer of Lucian Freud Portraits, Michael Opping. He spent 3 years interviewing the artist in preparation for the exhibition. Michael, welcome to Think.
Thank you.
What is it that makes Freud's work so different from that of his contemporaries, beyond simply the fact that he was doing portraits when people didn't care so much about this?
Well, that is a big part of it, that he was going against the grain of 20th century art, that pretty much the beginning of 20th century art was the beginning of the development of abstraction. And it seemed like the entire art world was hurtling towards a horizon that was all going to be about the abstract. Mm-hmm. And here was this man painting portraits. What I think distinguishes him, besides the fact that he was one of the few people doing it, was the intensity with which he approached portraiture. I mean, he looked at everything very, very carefully, particularly in his early years. When he was first learning to paint, he would sit down with a subject, and they would be in a chair, he would be in a chair, and they would be seated knee to knee, and he would bend forward. And he would look very carefully at every detail of the eye, every detail of the nose, and he saw a lot. In those early years, he told me that he used to get intense headaches just because he was looking so hard, and he felt like, you know, if I don't study this very carefully and I get it wrong, I'll never really learn how to do it.
Yeah.
So he worked very hard to get those details, knife edge brush strokes, you know, defining hair or skin.
And there's also this question, I guess, when you approach his work, whether or not he is inviting us to stare or daring us not to look away or a little bit of both.
Well, with Lucian's pictures, there is a sense of voyeurism that everybody gets. Going into Lucian's studio, and I have been in many artist studios over my almost 40-year career, is one of the most intense experiences. It's a very small second-story room. And you walk in, and the bed that the people lay on is there. The chair that the people sit on is there. And it's only about 10 by 15 feet. And so if two people are in that room, you feel each other's presence to a real and very considerable degree. And I think when he paints those pictures, he stands up, he moves forward and back. You get a sense that you're in the room with that person. And there is a... That's part of a strange psychological element that happens with Lucian's work that isn't just about painting and isn't just how paint is applied, but there's this issue of proximity between the person sitting there, sometimes completely naked, and the person gazing at them.
When you talk about the psychological element, we should mention that he had a very famous grandfather, Sigmund Freud. What kind of relationship did the two have?
They had, well, I asked Lucian that a couple of times. He said, oh, we got on fine. We got on just fine.
It's just a guy and his grandpa.
Just a guy and his grandpa, as if to try to diffuse it. And he would say, you know, the problem was not my relationship with my grandfather. The problem was with other people's relationship with my grandfather. And they try to blame me for that. Mm-hmm. And there is an interesting set of threads that runs through both of their work that took me a long time to figure out, because I really wanted the show to be about painting, and I didn't want to think of Lucian Freud as the illustrator of his grandfather's psychoanalysis. So what I came to realize is that Freud studied the mechanism of the mind, and he was trying to simply accept the human condition as the mind worked. His grandson, Lucian, was studying the human body, studying people as a physical species, and trying to accept that as it is, which is why some people find his portraits not pretty. Mm-hmm. You know, it's not photoshopped. You really get a sense of the person's skin. I've often said that when you're looking at a Freud painting, you can almost smell the person.
Hmm. And he was no less sort of critical studying his own form, and he would sort of go to great lengths to make sure that he could see himself objectively. How did he do that?
Well, he used a number of different types of mirrors. And Lucien told me, he said, the thing about doing a self-portrait is that you have to try to see yourself as if you're someone else.
Yeah.
And simply step away a bit. So he would use different kinds of mirrors, sometimes small hand mirrors, sometimes large full-length mirrors, and set them at odd angles so he could catch the side of his face in a way that he didn't normally see it. It's all of us have a friendly mirror in our house. You know, our bathroom mirror. I look in my bathroom mirror and things look just fine. They're just the way they always are.
Yeah.
It's fine. I go to a hotel room and I see a monster in the mirror and I wonder what happened. And what happened was I have become perceptually conditioned to look at myself in my home bathroom.
Yeah.
In my, you know, and so using these different mirrors, he was able to capture a Freud that he didn't see in his own mind.
It really is a remarkable way to sort of approach his work, thinking about that, and then to approach the way all of us see ourselves and the rest of the world. There's that, you know, the picture, the photograph that takes you by surprise of what you look like. And it takes some courage. It took some courage on his part, although I don't get the sense he was particularly vain, but to subject himself to that deliberately. But I suppose he felt it wouldn't be true if he didn't do it that way.
He told me he felt he owed it to his other subjects.
Huh.
If he's going to look at them with that kind of eye, if he's going to see in them what his eyes see and not hold back any punches, then he needs to do it to himself. So it was a way of keeping himself honest.
Did he paint himself in the nude?
Yes, he did. He painted himself. There's a famous nude. It's a full-length nude, standing nude. He's completely naked except holding his palette, a paintbrush, and he's wearing a pair of shoes without socks on because his studio floor is a bit rough and he didn't want to get splinters.
He often or occasionally painted people with their pets. Is that right?
He did. And with his pets. He had a whippet dog. And the animals that are in Lucien's paintings are there as part of the portraiture. I mean, their portrait is being painted as well. He's painted horses. He was a great horseman. And the whippet, Pluto, shows up a lot in Lucien's paintings. And again, it's a way, I think, of getting people to look at human beings as simply a part of a species. There's a human species. There's a dog species. And often you'll see the animals are entangled up with the people. So, I mean, there's a painting called Sunny Morning, Eight Legs. Mm-hmm. And it's two men, two nude men, and a whippet dog. And so it's just all of these legs just coming off of the bed. And he's really just looking at us as a torso with these limbs. He's fascinated by human anatomy.
What made him interested in painting a particular individual?
That's a good question. Lucien was a bit of a recluse, not a total recluse. He went out for dinners, and it should be said he led what the British would call a rather dodgy lifestyle. He went out very, very late at night. There were many women in his life.
Many children,
17. And he was a gambler. He got in a number of fights. He could be very social, but he could be very cantankerous, hard to get to know. In a certain sense, his portraits were about meeting people.
Mm-hmm.
If he met someone in a social situation and wanted to get to know them better, he would invite them to do a portrait. But he would have to interview them first and make sure that they could undergo the rigors of his gaze. We're talking about, you know, sitting twice a week, 3 hours a day for months.
Hmm.
So not everybody wanted to do that. But the people who did became his friends. That was his milieu. And some of them were royalty and some of them were criminals.
Did he stay in contact with them when he was done with their portraits?
Some of them. Not all of them. He did tell me that at the end of a portrait, a certain psychological transition has to take place. And you know whether you're going to stay in touch or whether you're not. Mm. And there would often be a falling out. I think what happened, as he described it, was that people get psychologically invested in the portrait. They begin to think of themselves as being immortalized.
Special in some way.
Extremely special. And that this portrait is the most important portrait Lucien has ever done. Mm-hmm. When for Lucien, every portrait's important. It's people. It's about a larger group portrait of society. You know, over his 70 years of painting various people from different calls of life, you know, so there were falling outs, and some people stayed close. It's hard to stay close to Lucien.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, he was someone that needed his house. He needed a certain restaurant that he would go to. So he wasn't that social.
It's interesting in some ways, those relationships and the way some of them ended well and some of them didn't. It almost sounds like, you know, people's sexual relationships over a lifetime. You know, you break it off with some people and you can remain friends, and others, you both know it's best if you never see each other again.
Well, that's a very good analogy, particularly in regards to Lucien Freud. You know, people, I was taking someone through the show the other day and they saw a picture of a woman and said, "Was that Lucien's girlfriend?" And I said, "You don't need to ask me that question anymore." Whenever you see a woman in this show, pretty much, except for the queen in Big Sue, perhaps, mm-hmm. you know, it was a relationship that he had. And those relationships take their course. He stayed in touch with almost all of those women. And, you know, a number of them, you will see portraits when they're in their late 20s.
Mm-hmm.
And then when they're in their early 70s.
Hmm. Did he have rules as to whether the subjects would see the works as they were coming together?
Well, yes. He painted them in the room. Mm-hmm. I mean, you had to be in the room with Lucien painting to do a portrait with him. Lucien never used photographs, and he never relied on memory. So you sat in the room for 3 hours while he painted, and you could see what he was doing.
I have to imagine some people saw that and thought, I don't look that way. That's ugly.
I'm sure they did. Mm-hmm. I'm sure over 70 years, a number of people did. There's a great story. He painted the Duchess of Devonshire, and there's a painting of her in the first room. And she was painted when she was 28 years old. And at a birthday party, when she turned 70, she toasted Lucien and said, "Lucien, I've finally grown into your portrait."
Did he have a great sense of humor when you got to know him over this time?
It was dry,
mm-hmm.
and a quiet sense of humor, but yes, he had a very good sense of humor, a visual sense of humor in particular. But he was, you know, he was quiet. He was so much about his painting. He did like to gossip a bit, but when you got him talking, he had a very good sense of humor. I remember I took him to lunch once, and it was the second or third time I had taken him to lunch, and he said, "Let me pay." I said, no, Lucien, please, allow me. He said, no. And I said, "No." And he said, "I'm not poor, you know." And I said, "Well, you just sold a painting for $30 million. I'm sure that's true." He goes, "I used to be. I was very poor. I gambled it all away." And this is true. He did.
Wow.
And then there was a silence, and he said, "You know, it's not so much fun gambling when you're rich."
My guest is Michael Oppong. He's chief curator of the Modern Art Museum of Fort Worth. The exhibition Lucien Freud Portraits will be at the Modern from July 1st until October 28th. We'll come back to the conversation in a moment. You can join us at 1-800-933-5372, or you can send email to think@kera.org.
Funding for Think comes from SMU's Master of Liberal Studies, a graduate education flexible enough to allow you to explore what matters most to you. More at smu.edu/MLS.
You You're listening to Think on KERA 90.1. I'm Chris Boyd. My guest this hour is Michael Opping. He is chief curator of the Modern Art Museum of Fort Worth, which will be exhibiting Lucian Freud portraits from July 1st through October 28th. If you'd like to be part of the conversation, give us a call. The number is 1-800-933-5372. You can also send email to think@kera.org. Michael, I was interested to read that Freud would either paint people during the day by natural light or he would paint them at night by artificial light, but he never worked on a day portrait at night and he never worked on a night portrait during the day.
That's true. And these portraits came out very differently as a result. When you walk through the exhibition, some of the portraits that seem almost more three-dimensional, I don't want to use the word harsh, they're more intense pictures because when you paint by artificial light and it's not infused with any natural light, the shadows become deeper and a little harder. And so there's an almost chiseled effect that you see in the night paintings. The day paintings are different. The skin feels different during the day. And Lucian mixed every single brushstroke. Now, you have to think about that. Every single brushstroke was a mix of different colors. Never laid down a single color. And he did that because skin is so many different colors. And when you perceive skin, you think you're looking at an orange person or a white person or a black person. Actually, you're looking at a variety of colors. And so he mixed every single stroke, and he would often wipe these strokes on the wall. So the interior of his studio was like a cave of impastoed paint. And it was all over the floor. So he was very interested. I should go back and explain that in the first part of the exhibition, the portraits are very detailed and very linear. And he was using a very fine sable hair brush at that time. And he wanted to get every detail right. And he would look at the line on that brush and see that it was just correct as he looked at the person in front of him, hence those headaches. He did a portrait of Francis Bacon, a sort of semi-abstract British painter.
They were good friends.
They were very good friends. And after Bacon saw his portrait, perhaps he didn't like it, he said, Lucian, why don't you loosen up? Just loosen up a little bit. And so Lucian got a different paintbrush. He went out and bought a thicker hog's hair paintbrush. And he started painting with it, and it was so luscious and rich. And at that same time, he decided to get out of the chair. I was describing how in the earlier portraits he would sit in a chair across from the subject, knee to knee. Now he stood back, but he stood up. And this way he could move back and forth between his subjects. And this is when skin really became an important part of Lucian's pictures. And when you think about it, a portrait, to a considerable extent, is about skin.
It's also about this sense that you want to understand someone. And so often the people in Lucian Freud's portraits look unhappy or they look, it's more than just pensive. They look uncomfortable. Did he purposely put them in that state?
I think the expression, and it's a hard expression to describe, they are uncomfortable to a certain degree. To sit for a portrait for 3.5 hours, you know, in a second floor studio in August is an uncomfortable experience. And you have to remain relatively still. The poses in Lucian's paintings, people often ask, did Lucian force these poses? You know, people have their legs spread apart. Some of them have their arms tangled around sheets. They had to find a pose that they could live with for 3 hours a day, twice a week, for 8 months. So the poses and the expressions are partly a matter of just physically adapting to the place. Some of them are bored. Many of them are asleep. If you look carefully at them, they're just asleep. And that's how they end up in these poses.
1-800-933-5372 is our telephone number. You can also email think@kera.org. We have an email here from Devin in Fort Worth who asks if you know what Freud thought of the phenomenon of the young British artists.
He knew Damien Hirst. He knew quite a few of them. One of the things that really attracted me to Lucian was that here was a man who had been painting for 70 years. And I've been following the avant-garde up and down for 40 myself. And, you know, there's so much of this person's hot and that person's cold. And, you know, this person sells for this much and that person sells for that much. Abstraction is alive. Representation is dead. Video is alive. Painting is dead. Lucian's lived through all of it. And he just sits up there in that second floor studio and just keeps painting people twice a day. So I think he was open to anyone who wanted to make art. He wasn't a curmudgeon. He didn't think of the new art as being a bad thing.
He was in his mid-80s when planning for this exhibition began. I mean, at that point, even though he couldn't have known that he would not live to see the opening in London, clearly he was aware that his legacy was under consideration. How invested was he in crafting that legacy beyond the existence of the portraits themselves?
Well, he was very much involved in this exhibition. This is the last exhibition that we can say Lucian Freud was definitively involved in, obviously. From here on out, the historians will take over. It was rather poignant. You know, right before his death, he had approved the checklist for the show. He liked everything that was in the show. He had read the essays. And surprisingly, he approved of all the interviews I did with him, which he had never done. I mean, he's rarely been interviewed, and he's never liked his voice going on like that. He really wants the paintings to speak for themselves. So I think he felt this was his last chance to say something. And then it's almost as if he just went off into his room and passed away. As if he was saying, you know, I've been to enough openings. I don't need to go to another one. My work is done.
Yeah. So I would imagine that you were at the opening in London.
Yes.
Can you talk about the sort of the air that that took on? Was it? Did it feel like a memorial? Did it feel like a party? What was the atmosphere like?
It's a good question. It was total celebration. It didn't feel like a memorial at all. It was an amazing thing to see many of the people that he had painted. And, you know, in Fort Worth, we just think of him as this great historical painter. He was a piece of the city of London. That would be like Andy Warhol dying in New York, you know, or Picasso dying in Paris. He was such a part of the London scene, not just the art scene, but the social scene and the royal scene. He painted the Queen. And people came out and, you know, all of the women that Lucian painted. And it was so funny at dinner, you know, every woman I met would say, "You do know I was the last to be with Lucian when he died." And I thought, that room isn't that big. There couldn't have been that many women in that room. And, you know, everyone wanted to tell their story about Lucian. Everyone had a story about Lucian. So it was really great.
What was it about Big Sue that made her so fascinating to him?
Well, if you're interested in skin, and that's what you really want to paint, get as much of it as you can. And Big Sue weighed in excess of 300 pounds. And she was willing to sit. And she was not afraid of her body. And she was not ashamed of her body, you know. And Freud, I think, really embraced that. Here's someone, I mean, when I think of the paintings of Big Sue, I think of Courbet, you know, the 19th century French painter, and some of his bathers, where, you know, a woman is painted not as an exotic sexual object, but as part of a species, as part of this natural force. And that's how these paintings feel. I mean, you don't feel any sense of embarrassment looking at these Big Sue pictures.
Can you talk a little bit about the process of interviewing Lucian Freud over, was it 2 or 3 years that you talked to him? I mean, how did you structure things? I mean, I do a lot of research and prepare and write down questions. I would imagine if you're going back over and over and over, there's a different way that you approach these things.
Well, I had questions, which of course would end up going by the wayside because I'd lose the question. Or what really saved me was that I always brought pictures. Artists need pictures. You know, that's what, if you want to get an artist to talk, bring pictures. Don't ask questions. So I would bring books and some Xerox pictures that I had, and I would just ask about that picture, and then he would talk about it. And we had a routine. I would usually come around noon, and then we would have lunch at Sally Clark's, which is just down the street, come back, do an hour interview, and then Lucien would take a 3.5-hour nap, get up, have some tea, and then he would meet his night sitter, and he'd paint at night. And he did that almost to the very end.
Were you in the studio with him?
When he was painting? Mm-hmm. I was never in the studio when he was painting. I don't think he ever allowed that, other than his assistant, David Dawson. Mm-hmm. I was in the studio with paintings in progress, which was fascinating, too. Over the last work that is in this exhibition was on Lucien's easel when he passed away, and we've included it in the show because it's almost complete. And I don't consider it an unfinished painting, really. I consider it a painting that he stopped, which is a little different.
Yeah.
And he tended to work out from the center of a picture towards the edges.
Was there anything you really wanted to know that you hesitated to ask him?
No, I pretty much ask him everything. At a certain point, I got brazen enough to ask the questions that I thought I might be embarrassed to ask. Mm-hmm. I mean, at one point, there was a silence, and I said, did you ever have sex with any of these women? And there was a silence, and he goes, what do you think? And I didn't respond. Then I was stopped. And I asked him about his grandfather, and there were some paintings, some nudes he did of his daughter, mm-hmm. Rose, that I had said to him, you know, for an American audience, this is, you know, a bit much.
Yeah.
I mean, I think Americans might think of this as over the top. And, you know, his response was, my daughter has nothing to be ashamed of. Hmm. Now, that picture is not in the exhibition. Not because I edited it. It's only because the lender wouldn't lend it.
You have written that it took a while for American critics and American audiences really to come to terms with what Freud was trying to do and with what his work was and to really appreciate it, and that even as late as the 80s, there was some ambivalence. Can you talk about that and about how and why we've sort of come around?
Well, I know I had trouble with Lucien's work in the mid-80s when I saw his retrospective at the Hirshhorn Museum. And to me, the paintings were so turgid and so earthy. And I was thinking in terms of clean, clear abstractions. Mm-hmm. And, you know, and I'm thinking about the white walls of the museum as the perfect white cube. And here were these, like, molds, these almost human molds on the wall. And I didn't like them, and I told people straight away I was not interested in them. But the more I saw, the more I realized why they affected me the way they did. And I think our culture, particularly American culture, you know, this is the country that Grant Wood painted American Gothic. Mm-hmm. And this is the country that created Andy Warhol. And those pictures are very flat. They're very flat and almost abstract. If you look at a picture of Marilyn, you know, she's all cosmetics and flat shapes, and that's what we want. And we're also the culture of Photoshop, you know, and Playboy magazine. And, you know, and that's not Freud's world. You know, Freud's actually trying to accept people as they are. He's not trying to make them into a sexual fantasy. These are who they are. This is what they really look like.
So we, of course, know Freud as a British painter, but in fact, he was born in 1922 in Germany. How was he affected by that move by his family to really escape the rise of Nazism?
Well, he was very young when they left, and he was put into boarding school. And, you know, he sort of was out in the country. This one boarding school that he remembers most was out in the country. And he fell in love with animals, and particularly horses. Mm-hmm. And he told me that when the horses were sick, he would go in the barn and sleep with them. Hmm. And there are portraits, actually, that Lucien has done of horses. Then, of course, he loved horses so much that he went on to gamble on horses and lost almost all of his money. If it weren't, you know, in a way, if it weren't for horses, you know, Lucien would have painted less because he had to paint because he kept losing his money at the horse track. And there are some bookies in Ireland who have millions of dollars worth of Freud's. And partially as a result of paying gambling debts.
Did he, when he had money, I mean, did he spend lavishly?
He never did.
You talk about that tiny studio.
Yeah. I mean, he lived a simple life. He really did. It really revolved mostly around painting, lunch, and dinner when the gambling was done.
Mm-hmm.
When the gambling was done, so much was about, you know, he would go to the Woolsey for dinner and he would go to Sally Clark's for lunch. When you're painting twice a day, there isn't a lot of time for anything else.
What do you think the gambling was about?
Well, I think he was someone who liked to live on the edge. And I think he was a great horseman. You know, he mostly gambled on horse racing. And I think he felt he knew horses to such an extent that he could go out and pick a horse, almost by personality.
Mm-hmm.
But he also liked to live on the edge. You know, that's an edgy thing to invite someone into your room. It has one chair and a bed with a sheet. And say, now, you're going to be here for the next 8 months, and I'm going to look at you.
Did he care how they felt about the finished portraits?
I'm sure he did. But I don't think he cared so much that it would change his painting.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm sure he did care. And I'm sure many people were unhappy with how they looked. What always fascinated me is that he would paint someone, say his daughter, and someone would buy the picture of his daughter without knowing it's his daughter. They had not a clue who this person was.
Hmm.
So this isn't like buying a portrait of a count,
yeah,
you know, or a prince. There's something about the humanity within the individual picture that would make someone spend $1 million to have a portrait of someone who they don't even know who it is.
Michael Opping is my guest. He is chief curator of the Modern Art Museum of Fort Worth. The exhibition Lucian Freud Portraits will open at the Modern July 1st and run through October 28th. We'll come back to the conversation in a moment. We've got some of your emails to read at think@kera.org. You can also get to us over the phone at 1-800-933-5372.
Funding for Think comes from SMU's Master of Liberal Studies, a multidisciplinary program that allows you the intellectual freedom to design your own master's degree. More at smu.edu/MLS.
You're listening to Think on KERA 90.1. I'm Chris Boyd. My guest this hour is Michael Opping. He's chief curator of the Modern Art Museum of Fort Worth and co-director of the Lucian Freud Portraits Exhibition, which will run at the Modern from July 1st through October 28th. You can join us at 1-800-933-5372. Michael, the portraits of Freud's mother are notable in that they, in some ways, are unlike the other portraits that he did. Can you talk a little bit about those?
They're fascinating. And we all think about how we're reflected or not reflected in our parents. And the portraits of his mother came about late in his mother's life. Well, late in Lucian's life as well. She was a very, very attentive mother to Lucian, as Lucian tells it. Very, very attentive, particularly to Lucian, and was constantly after him. And Lucian said to me, you know, she would accuse me of doing things that I was thinking about doing, but I hadn't gotten around to doing yet.
That's moms everywhere, yes.
And he goes, I just couldn't take it. He
mm-hmm.
said, she was just on top of me. And so he kind of ran away from her. I mean,
mm-hmm.
he tried to stay away from her as a young artist to become himself. And then late in life, when she lost Lucian's father, she became very depressed and tried to commit suicide. And Lucian began worrying about her and wanted to spend some time with her. So he had her over to the studio to paint. That's what he did.
So he could keep an eye on her for 6 hours a week or whatever it was.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. He could be with her and keep an eye on her. The irony is that she had gotten to a point where I think there was a bit of dementia. And so she would come and sit and read. And the woman who was always being attentive to him to the point that he couldn't stand it now completely disregarded him.
Hmm.
And he just painted. And he painted her. And he did, I think there are four or five paintings at least of his mother. Sometimes she's reading. Sometimes she's resting and sleeping. And they're very poignant. And Lucian would say, you know, it's a really strange way to do a self-portrait. Hmm. He said, maybe as difficult or more difficult than using strange mirrors.
We have an email here from Bill who wants to know if you will discuss David Dawson and how he assisted Freud in his work.
Well, David was Lucian's trusted assistant. And David was Lucian's assistant for 21 years. And he was straight out of art school, and one of the galleries that handled Lucian's work called him and said, you know, we have an artist who needs just a little bit of assistance, you know, running some errands, this and that. So it started as a one-day-a-week thing, and over 21 years, he became one of Lucian's closest friends. So David played a big role, and David played a big role in this exhibition in making sure that everything ran smoothly and that Lucian was aware of what was going on in the show. And, you know, I owe a good deal to Lucian and David. I had to, in order to bring the show to Fort Worth, it wasn't just a matter of convincing the National Portrait Gallery in London. They said, fine, we'd love to work with you. This is great. You have to convince Lucian.
Mm-hmm.
And so I had to make an appointment the first time, go there. And David introduced us, and things went very well from that point on. But David was a very important part of Lucian's life and may very well end up living in the house that Lucian left near Notting Hill.
What is the process like when you want to go and convince Lucian Freud? Had you met him before this introduction that David Dawson made for you?
I had not.
So what do you say about the modern? What do you say about Fort Worth? What do you say about yourself in order to make this the only other destination for this exhibition?
Well, he knew of the exhibition, and I had sent him some things that I had written. But basically, you just had to go and convince him that you really wanted to do it.
Mm-hmm.
And my mantra was to just be patient, which is not always an easy thing for me. And to not try to, you know, this is not someone you can hustle into a relationship.
Right.
You know, he's been in the art world for 70 years. I'm not going to fool this guy.
Mm-hmm.
I have to talk about what I know about. And we talked. It was fabulous. I remember the first time I met him, I was so nervous. We were to meet at noon, and I arrived an hour early. And, of course, I couldn't knock on the door
mm-hmm.
an hour early, so I walked up and down the street for 58 minutes.
Hmm.
And finally, I was so tired, I just knocked on the door. He opened it immediately and said, "You're 2 minutes early." So precision was part of his German background and a part of his personality. But you know, the other part of this was that he was fascinated about showing in Texas.
Hmm.
I mean, I think a lot of Europeans have this exotic idea of Texas and cowboys and Indians and ranches and horses, and he had never shown in this part of the world before. So I think that certainly helped the case.
He often said that he was not really influenced by fellow German artists, and there are some critics who have said that's clearly not the case. What do you think about that?
Well, there's no question that in his early work, he was influenced by Albrecht Dürer, the German Renaissance artist. And Dürer was all about precision. We're talking about thin, thread-like strokes of paint. Not a brush stroke, almost just like a thread of paint. And Lucian tried to replicate that. I mean, the hair in the portraits of his first wife, Kitty Garman, is, I think it's taken right off of the head of Albrecht Dürer and put on Kitty Garman.
Mm-hmm.
So he was clearly influenced by Dürer. I don't think he was as influenced by German expressionism of the 30s and 40s and 50s, but certainly by Albrecht Dürer.
We have an email here from Kevin who wants to know how Freud's style differed from Francis Bacon. Both were doing portraits during an age of abstraction. Both were rebels in that way. But Bacon painted from photographs, and Freud always had the sitter in the studio. How did this impact their styles?
Well, they worked in moving in totally opposite directions. So Bacon would take a photograph and abstract it, or try to extract some expressionist essence from the photograph. So Bacon is operating using his own psychology about a photograph and then allowing paint to react to the photograph. Lucian never used photographs. Lucian always said, photographs are too abstract. And Bacon's portraits took place over time, but very quickly. You know, he often painted in an expressionistic way, and it happened explosively. Lucian's portraits take place in long time. That's why they're so unique. That's why people can stand and look at them for hours. He is in the room with this person for hours and hours and hours. You know, a photograph is like an instantaneous hit.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's like a little molecule that is, you know, we think of it as being very realistic, but it's as abstract as anything else. I think Lucian's paintings are much more realistic in that sense.
Are they more, I don't know if the word is mindful, but there's that sense that it seems incredibly hard to communicate that amount of time that you have spent with someone or on someone, but you do get the sense that it's been a while. How exactly does that happen?
How does he do it?
Can you help us understand that?
He makes them sit for hours and hours and hours, and he says, and if you won't do it, then we can't proceed. I mean, and there have people who've walked out. I mean, there in the show, there's a painting. In the background, you see a man breastfeeding a baby with his breast.
And there's like an elderly man in the front.
An elderly man in the front reading. And you wonder, what is that about? Well, the original sitter for the breastfeeding was Jerry Hall, Mick Jagger's wife. And she and Lucian had a falling out. And there are any number of stories around that. One is that she thought Lucian's studio was too dirty and she didn't want her baby to be around it. Lucian said she never came on time and she kept canceling, and I can't do a portrait if you won't sit. So in a sense, you commit yourself when you're working with Lucian, and I think you feel it. Like you were saying, the expression on these people's faces is unlike anything you've seen. It's not like I'm happy to be here, or it's not like I'm being tortured. It's sort of like it's just in time.
Mm-hmm. And I guess there's no substitute for that.
No, exactly.
1-800-933-5372 is our telephone number. We have an email here from Bill in Dallas who wants to know if Robert Hughes contributed to the exhibition catalog.
No, but he did write an essay for the 1987 Hirshhorn exhibition. It was a retrospective, and there's a very good essay by Robert Hughes in that catalog.
Can you talk about when you are creating a catalog like this, when you're putting together the exhibition? I mean, are you thinking this is a document of, this is a particular way of viewing this artist that will last through time, or do you know in your mind that 30 years from now there may be a very different take on Freud?
I think you're pretty aware that you're trying to capture just a moment in time. We didn't know, of course, that Lucian was going to pass away right before the exhibition opened. And I didn't know that the interviews I did would be the last interviews with Lucian Freud. So the interviews will stand. My particular take on Freud is Freud from America, you know, looking at Freud through American eyes. And I wanted that to be something that, you know, that people could read and perhaps relate to or not relate to. There will be another take on Freud. There's no question in 25, 30 years. He stands out so much in the history of 20th century art. And there will be some biographies. And those you will want to read.
Mm-hmm.
Those you will want to read.
They sound like they'll be juicy as well as informative.
I'm sure.
Tell us a little bit about the installation at the Modern and what audiences will find when they arrive.
Well, the exhibition is installed essentially in chronological order, beginning with the late 1940s, 1950s, and early 1960s. And in there, they're mostly head portraits because, you know, I asked Lucien, I said, well, they're all large heads, these early works. He goes, well, Michael, at that time, all I did was paint heads, and I suppose I wanted to get the most out of them. That's why they're that's why they're large.
How big are the canvases?
And, well, some of them are, you know, and some of them are quite tiny. Some of them are almost like miniatures, you know, 8 inches by 9 inches, and then they get a little larger, you know, 2.5 feet by 3 feet. And then when he stops painting with the sable hair brush, then all of a sudden you see the scale of the paintings jump to being much larger and juicier.
Mm-hmm.
Juicier. The skin just starts to pop off the face. You see, you know, you can see so much in the skin of these figures. And then again, you'll move into a number of rooms where you'll see faces with skin. I mean, there's a painting, for instance, called Father and Daughter. And the father has scars on his face because he was in a bank robbery, and there are a number of stories. He was
Like a convicted criminal.
He was a convicted criminal who lived below Lucien's studio. And so, you know, Lucien was fascinated by skin to the extent that he wanted to paint scars.
Mm-hmm.
Lucien got in a fight once and somebody hit him in the face and he got a black eye. So he did a self-portrait of himself with a black eye because, as he told me, I wanted to paint damaged skin. And I don't want people to interpret that as saying that he's trying to damage other people's skin with his paintings, because he's not. I mean, you see some of these pictures and they seem so real and so beautiful. It's just, he's just painting skin as a material.
Mm-hmm. Do you think he fully understood why he was compelled to paint?
Well, I don't know why he was compelled to paint. I think I know why he was compelled to paint people.
Mm-hmm.
That's the key, is that he painted people. And I think he always painted people. And I think he would, and I've often thought this, you know, what are people most interested in at the end of the day?
Other people.
People. And I think that he felt that that's what art needed to be about. And he wasn't the only artist of the 20th century to think that abstraction was taking us to a direction where it just became ether.
The pendulum swung too far.
It had maybe swung too far. I mean, even Cézanne had said, I can't go completely abstract. Mm-hmm. I just can't. Because what you do is you're leaving behind people and you're leaving behind nature. And so I think by painting people, you know, he was able to hold on to that piece of nature.
Michael Opping is chief curator of the Modern Art Museum of Fort Worth. The museum has the exhibition Lucien Freud Portraits on display from July 1st through October 28th. Michael, it's been a really fascinating conversation. Thank you so much for spending this hour with us.
My pleasure. Thank you.
Today's show was engineered by Shelley Canavy. Christine McConnell produces the podcast. Jeff Whittington is senior producer. You can learn more about Think and find out about upcoming programs at our website, kera.org/think. That's also where you can download the free daily podcast. You've got comments, questions, or suggestions for the show, send those along. The address is think@kera.org. Once again, I'm Chris Boyd. Thanks for listening and have a great day.